There's no way of knowing how long we've been fascinated by the night sky, probably since before we were humans, but we can tell about when it got harder to see the night sky, and that would be in the 19th century with the invention of the electric light. Because of it, the wild tapestry of stars and planets and galaxies looks much dimmer in our time. In cities, it's just plain hard to see if there's anything up there. There are plenty of people who appreciate being able to see the sky. They advocate a dark sky and have laid out some steps to help us achieve a darker sky. We'll visit with two groups from our part of the world. Stephen Bosbach is in the studio with me. He's with Southern Oregon Sky Watchers. Good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
And we have Robin Werdahl with us as well from Lights Out Bend. Welcome, Robin.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you both here. So let's start with you, Steve, here in the studio. Has this been a tough summer for astronomy fans with all the smoke from the
Olympics? Yes, it has. We're still getting some astronomy done, but it's been a tough summer.
And then east of the Cascades, Robin, what's been the situation over there?
Well, we've had less smoke this year than last year, so it's not been as bad. I'm part of the Audubon Association as well. Our Lights Out Bend is a project of our East Cascades Audubon Society, and one other indication of the smokiness here this year is the counting of the swifts, you know, the chimney swifts. Mm-hmm. There have been, I think the high count so far has been 240 coming into the chimney at the Boys and Girls Club, and I believe the high count last year was only in the double digits, like I think it was about 80. The birds really avoided this area last year because of the smoke. It was really bad up here, fires up by sisters and so forth.
Sure, yeah, I remember last year being pretty bad in Central
really
Oregon.
Really bad, so, yeah, right, so it's better this year.
Okay,
so
good. And did you get a chance to see the Perseid meteor shower in August relatively well then?
I saw a little bit of it. I don't stay up real late, unfortunately. Yes, there I did get to see some of this spectacular meteors.
Okay, that is a hazard, I guess, if you have an early job or something that and you're interested in the night sky.
Yeah, it's a little conflict, you know, but there's a lot of benefits to having the darker sky. So, you know, not the least of which, if I can just branch out here, it's a danger for migrating birds when we have unshielded lights in our cities, because they use the stars actually in the magnetic fields to do their long migrations. And we are in migration season now. We kind of stress a focus point of the migration as being the autumnal equinox, September 21st, when we encourage people just to commit to one day of having making sure that their outside lights are turned off, their drapes are closed, so that, you know, we don't have light trespass, we don't have unshielded light, we don't have glare. That'll really help the birds to be able to migrate without crashing into windows and getting distracted. Plus, there's so much research coming out now about how damaging light is. Excessive light, artificial light, is for humans because our eyes are connected to our brains, and artificial light at night, there is a lot of evidence now that shows that it affects the pineal gland and the production of melatonin, which is part of our circadian rhythm and keeps us healthy. There's clear evidence that people who work night shift and are exposed to light at night have increased incidences of breast cancer and colorectal cancer. And I was just reading this morning, prepping for this show, I found an interesting bit of information that it was found that people who are profoundly blind have half the rate of breast cancer and in females, and half the rate of colorectal cancers and prostate cancers in men.
Is that possibly because of exposure to light or not exposure to light in their case?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
There's definitely a light connection. And you know, and also there's a lot of research going on now about the specific ways that light harms the retina, because the retina is a very delicate tissue, actually. And we've evolved to have a long period of darkness every night. And when we don't have that, it actually overexposure or overilluminance of the retina can actually cause cell damage and death in varying degrees. And people are doing a lot of research on this now and finding out the specifics.
Okay, a lot to think about in terms of health effects from the amount of light we put out there. We're talking to Robin Werdahl from Lights Out Bend and Stephen Bosbach from the Southern Oregon Sky Watchers about the night sky and the need, in some cases, to see it better. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Stephen, you've lived in a couple of places, you were telling me, as we were settling in here. There's a sense that this is still a rural enough region that there are lots of places to see the night sky. Does it compare favorably with some of the places you've lived?
Oh, sure. We used to live in Austin, Texas, or just outside the city, and that's becoming a very light polluted area. It's almost a million people now. And literally, you would need to get 30 to 40 miles away from the metro area before you really got to see a good sky. In fact, I grew up north of Boston, and really never experienced a good sky until I moved west, went to undergraduate in Colorado. And I remember getting out of the cab in Fort Collins, Colorado, on a clear night, and just being flabbergasted. I couldn't believe the number of stars I was seeing. Of course, this was at 5,000 feet, and Fort Collins was a small town back then. But you get the idea. We have that same experience here. We can get up into the Cascades at about 5,000 feet. We have a nice observing location up there for the club. And it's just dynamite. It's incredible how many stars you can see there. And we are losing that. We're losing that appreciation for the night sky.
Now, is it getting, it seems like we've been talking about this long enough that by now we might have turned a corner and convinced a few more people to have their lights more downcast, that sort of thing. But did it get worse again with LED bulbs, I wonder?
Yes. And it's just a matter of education, not only on the part of the public, but municipalities. They got on the bandwagon very quickly, through government grants, started retrofitting lights. They're doing that slowly here in Ashland. When they did that, they didn't always do the research about color spectrum, what is a good light, what produces minimum glare. The LEDs can be extremely bright. And there's a temptation when you replace incandescent with LED to go with a brighter light and not necessarily one that
because you get more
same
illumination for less
sure
light.
You can get more illumination for less wattage and less cost, so let's go with a brighter light. And of course now if it isn't shielded properly, you get excessive glare. It gets into some specifics of how the lighting fixture is designed, but some of them are poorly designed. It doesn't necessarily illuminate evenly like your incandescent light does. You may have hot spots. You may have a darker spot right under the light, and then it lights more out towards the edges. This introduces glare.
I want to get to glare in just a second. I do want to ask before we move just about some regional specifics. And Robin, in your case, in Bend, with Central Oregon growing so quickly, I just wonder how quickly the night sky has diminished there.
Well, you know, I think actually it's remained relatively stable. Interestingly enough, we have one volunteer in our group, Bill Kowalik, who's an expert in satellite data, and he's analyzed data from the publicly available information from two different satellites for the Central Oregon area over the last, I think the data went back, I'm sorry, it's about 5 years' worth of data, and it actually has not been increasing like you might expect. So we do have an ordinance in the city of Bend with a similar ordinance for the Deschutes County where all fixtures are supposed to be fully shielded, like the other guest was talking about. It's an important basic step on controlling light pollution. That means that the bulb is not visible, that the actual source of light is not visible, and all the light should be cast downward where we want it and where we need it. It should not go up in the sky. So I think, you know, even though we found that those ordinances are kind of marginally enforced, you know, and the public has not been well educated yet, at least the overall numbers are not, does not appear to be going up at this time. We're trying to start a program that will give us very detailed light pollution information in the Bend area. Just our general rule that we try to educate people about is that we want them to use as little light as is needed. We don't want people stumbling around in the dark. We want them to be able to see what they're doing when they need it, but we want them to use as little light as possible, direct it to where it is needed, wanted, and helpful, and not wasteful and harmful.
Bringing back the night sky, the topic here on The Exchange, Robin Werdahl's with Lights Out Bend. Stephen Bosbach is with the Southern Oregon Sky Watchers. You can join the conversation. Are there places that you used to go and look at the sky and you can't anymore because there's too much artificial light? Or has it gotten better over time? Let's hear your story. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So are there ordinances in the Rogue Valley, for example, that you have advocated for at Southern Oregon Sky Watchers, or that already existed that help with some of the light pollution we're talking about?
You're talking about other organizations, or?
I'm talking about whether Southern Oregon Sky Watchers have pushed for ordinances.
Actually, no. At least not that I'm aware of. There are ordinances in both Medford and Ashland. They could be better written. There's a lot of loopholes. Sometimes
the leakage from the LEDs.
And sometimes it's just a matter of someone with experience coming in and helping craft that ordinance so it does what it's supposed to do.
Let's talk about some of those mechanics then of light that we were starting to get into. Glare is a big one. I mean, this is when you look at the light and it's really hard to look at. You have to turn away in a sense,
right,
because it hurts your eyes. Is this what we're talking about?
Right. I mean, somebody shines a flashlight in your eyes and it's rude. I mean, you start blinking. That's not right. And yet we go through the city every day with very poor lighting. And we just accept it because we grew up with it, right? That's the way it is. And yet it doesn't have to be that way. We can produce extremely good lighting through the entire city without a lot of glare. And, young eyes function differently than old eyes. You and I are old enough to know that the light scatters more in an old eye, and we don't adapt as quickly.
Changing glass,
from light to dark and dark to light. So as headlights, oncoming headlights, you know, it affects us more. And we begin to notice that more as we get older. Well, all that glare in an urban environment does the same thing.
So for the people who, though, and Robin was getting into this about the fact that, you know, you can have the light you need. We want you to be safe. But there are people, I think, who might find the landscape at the ground level a little on the gloomy side. I mean, so can you provide safe enough environments with the light directed in just the places you need it?
Right. That's not the issue. We're not in favor of darkening the urban environment. The urban environment can be well lit. Often it is overlit. Advertising tends to have this war of light going on, continually escalating.
No business turns a sign off at night anymore.
Right, right. And there are places around observatories like Tucson and Flagstaff, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Flagstaff has an ordinance that's very tight. At 1 o'clock in the morning, the lights go off. Advertising. Advertising lights generally are poorly directed. I mean, it's very hard to do an illuminated sign and not have a lot of light scatter. So those lights just go off at 1 in the morning.
When businesses are closed, the lights are off. Flagstaff has evolved with Lowell Observatory and was the first dark sky city recognized by the International Dark Sky Association.
Right.
All right, so when the businesses close, the lights are off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great. And thank you for bringing up this point. This is a very difficult concept to explain to people. And as Stephen said, we're all used to glare. This is what we've experienced in our entire lifetimes, and we think that that's normal. But what Flagstaff has done and these other dark sky communities has done is it's so interesting. Once you really eliminate all the glare, you can use less light, but you can see better. It's more of an ambient light. It is a not full daylight, but it is perfectly adequate for safety and enjoyment. It's a just a difficult concept to get. But
so are you lighting things and not environments? Is that the basic concept here?
No, you're actually lighting the environment, but you're eliminating glare, mm-hmm. and you're using a warmer, what is now recommended. And even the AMA has weighed in on this because they understand the research mm-hmm. that the high-intensity lights, the blue-rich white light, that's the super bright white light, they understand that it's very bad for us. And even the AMA has weighed in on how bright and what color street lights should be. And they're saying that it should be no higher than 3,000 Kelvin, and that's a color-correlated temperature.
That's closer to tungsten than to sunlight, for example.
It's a number with a K after it and then CCT. Mm-hmm. And what the AMA recommends and what is good for us is less than 3,000 or less K. And once you can do that, and it's just that nobody experiences this unless you travel down to Flagstaff to check it out. Like my husband took me down there so I could see what it was really like in a dark sky community, and it is revolutionary, really. I mean, there's no other word for it. We don't experience it unless you're an astronomer and you just have the red lights on and there's no glare. It's just different. You can absolutely see everything that you need.
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. It's totally comfortable. In fact, you know, I had this subjective experience, which is a little hard to talk about. But I tell you, I felt like my brain relaxed. I mean, it was more comfortable in that more dim, but perfectly adequate with zero glare. The thing is, one little bit of glare makes your pupils constrict, and then you can't see. That really bright street light, I mean, it's like when I was growing up, I would walk down a street or whatever, you know, there'd be a bright pool of light under the street light. Then you'd enter complete darkness. And then just about the time your eyes would adjust, you'd hit the next street light to walk through, you know. And you're going from pools of light to very dark. And when you fully shield the light and use the warmer lights, that is gone.
I remember that effect you're talking about on bicycles as a kid, for sure. We're talking about the night sky with Robin Werdahl and Stephen Bosbach. So, Stephen, have you been to Flagstaff, too?
Yes.
Yeah, and how impressed
are
you?
In fact, I lived in Flagstaff for a while.
Okay.
It's a different environment there for the night sky because it is so high and so dry that you can see stars even under a streetlight. But it is an evolving situation there. It wasn't as good when I was there, but they've since adopted some very good ordinances.
So Robin had mentioned about some, and I'll come back to her about the events in Bend. Is there anything similar to that going on in the Rogue Valley, this sort of voluntary blackout, a lights out situation?
No, and I would love to work with both Medford and Ashland to craft some better ordinances. One thing I did want to bring up was the safety aspect. Mm-hmm. People feel that I can't turn off my yard light. That would make it unsafe.
Well, I have neighbors who keep their porch lights on all night,
I know.
Every night.
Well, all the studies that have been done show absolutely no correlation whatsoever between property crime and light. Half of the property crimes happen during broad daylight. Half.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
It doesn't make any difference. In fact, in Great Britain during the last recession, some of the municipalities got so desperate that in order to save money, they began turning off the streetlights. And so they tracked the crime rate, and it didn't change. Nothing changed. Now, they have seen some correlation between light and assault. Crimes of assault are affected by light. But property crime has no correlation whatsoever. So if you're leaving your yard light on because you think that will keep burglars away or theft down or vandalism, no, it doesn't.
Wow. Okay. This is must be a tough message to get across, though, Robin.
Yeah, this is the hard point right here, what we're talking about. People don't understand what it looks like to have a fully shielded fixture and ambient lighting, and they do think that they're safer with brighter lights. So our basic message is that brighter is not better. We do want people to feel safe, but we're also concerned about everybody's health. and the environment. We recommend that people use timers on their outside lights if they feel like they need to have a light in front of their garage or something. Mm-hmm. And if somebody walks into the field, go ahead and utilize motion sensors
mm-hmm.
and lights on timers.
Motion sensors.
People are really worried about their property. A dog is probably a better ploy than lighting.
Certainly a terrier, I can attest to that, yes.
Little terriers.
Yeah, really, terrorists we call them. Liz in Ashland sent an email. She says, Ashland High School and the SOU sports fields are the worst offenders in Ashland. Their increased LED security lights are also a problem. They seem to have no requirement to follow the city night sky ordinance.
And that's true because... they're not under the same ordinance. They're not under the same regulation.
Yes, Flagstaff has done it. Flagstaff's got some good lights on support.
And you would like to do what, Steve?
I would love to see them come on board. For instance, the lighting here at SOU varies a lot depending on when it was put in. Some of the old lighting, it's grandfathered in, and... especially the stadium lighting. And I understand as the stadium gets upgraded, that will change too, but it's pretty bad right now.
I can attest to the fact that most of the newer stuff on Southern Oregon University turns off when people are not in the room or if they're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't move much during the show, so if I'm alone in the studio, I have to wave my arms usually a couple times an hour to get the lights to turn back on. So that's a nice move. So before we go, Robert, we just got about a minute left. Can you describe again what's going on September 21st, what you want people to do?
Yes, so Lights Out Bend is partnering with Lights Out Portland to have a focus on the autumnal equinox of September 21st, and we would love it if people would just commit to one day to take a pledge to evaluate their outside lighting and see if it's fully shielded, use timers, make sure everything is pointed downward, and close your drapes to keep light from inside your home from going out. To help that migration. So that's about it. It's using timers, fully shielded, pointing downward, use as little as you have to. Use what you need, but use it, just modestly. It's all about good design. We haven't had a lot of thoughtful design. Everything we see out there in the world, it's just happened.
All right.
But now we have, especially with the advent of LEDs, you're absolutely correct. I think this whole movement has occurred with the advent of LEDs because you can get so much light, too much light, for not much money.
It's a great energy saving,
but it's like it's too intense.
Gets to be a trick to see the night sky. And that's what Stephen Bosbach and Robin Werdahl are after. Stephen is with the Southern Oregon Sky Watchers, Robin with Lights Out Bend. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Jeff.